Chapter 4, The President. Half a mile back, Shuckworth, Shanks and Shawler were keeping the television camera aimed all the time at the glass elevator. And across the world, millions and millions of people were clustered around their TV screens, watching tensely the drama being acted out 240 miles above the Earth. In his study in the White House sat Lancelot R. Gilligrass, President of the United States of America, the most powerful man on Earth. In this moment of crisis, all his most important advisers had been summoned urgently to his presence. And there they all were now, following closely on the giant television screen every move made by this dangerous-looking glass capsule and its 8 desperate-looking astronauts. The entire cabinet was present. The chief of the army was there, together with 4 other generals. There was the chief of the navy and the chief of the air force and a sword swallower from Afghanistan who was the president's best friend. There was the president's chief financial advisor who was standing in the middle of the room trying to balance the budget on top of his head, but it kept falling off. Standing nearest of all to the president was the vice president, a huge lady of 89 with a whiskery chin. She had been the president's nurse when he was a baby, and her name was Miss Tibbs. Miss Tibbs was the power behind the throne. She stood no nonsense from anyone. Some people said she was as strict with the president now as when he was a little boy. She was the terror of the White House, and even the head of the Secret Service broke into a sweat when summoned to her presence. Only the president was allowed to call her nanny. The president's famous cat, Mrs. Torbsypus, was also in the room. There was absolute silence now in the presidential study. All eyes were riveted on the TV screen as the small glass object, with its booster rockets firing, slid smoothly up behind the giant space hotel. "They're going to link up!" shouted the president. "They're going on board our space hotel!"
"They're going to blow it up!" cried the chief of the army. "Let's blow them up first! Crash, bang, wallet, bang, bang, bang!"
The chief of the army was wearing so many medal ribbons they covered the entire front of his tunic on both sides and spread down onto his trousers as well.
"Come on, Mr. P," he said. "Let's have some really super-duper explosions!"
"Silence, you silly boy!"
said Miss Tibbs, and the chief of the army slunk into a corner. "Listen," said the president, "the point is this. Who are they and where do they come from? Where's my chief spy?"
"Here, sir, Mr. President, sir," said the chief spy.
He had a false moustache, a false beard, false eyelashes, false teeth, and a falsetto voice. "Knock, knock," said the president.
"Who's there?"
said the chief spy. "Courtney."
"Courtney who?"
"Courtney won yet?" said the president. There was a brief silence.
"The president asks you a question," said Miss Tibbs in an icy voice. "Have you caught anyone yet?"
"No, ma'am, not yet,"
said the chief spy, beginning to twitch.
"Well, here's your chance,"
snarled Miss Tibbs.
"Quite right," said the president. "Tell me immediately who those people are in that glass capsule."
"Aha,"
said the chief spy, twirling his fake false moustache.
"That is a very difficult question."
"You mean you don't know?"
"I mean I do know, Mr. President. At least I think I know. Listen, we have just launched the finest hotel in the world, right?"
"Right."
"And who is so madly jealous of this wonderful hotel of ours that he wants to blow it up?"
"Miss Tibbs," said the president.
"Wrong," said the chief spy. "Try again."
"Well," said the president, thinking deeply, "in that case, could it not perhaps be some other hotel owner who's envious of our lovely hotel?"
"Brilliant!" cried the chief spy. "Go on, sir! You're getting warm!"
"It's Mr. Savoy," said the president.
"Warmer and warmer, Mr. President!"
"Mr. Ritz!"
"You're hot, sir! You're boiling hot! Go on!"
"I've got it!" cried the president. "It's Mr. Hilton!"
Well done, sir, said the chief spy.
Are you sure it's him?
Not sure, but it's certainly a warm possibility, Mr. President. After all, Mr. Hilton's got hotels in just about every country in the world, but he hasn't got one in space, and we have. He must be madder than a maggot.
By gum, we'll soon fix this, snapped the president, grabbing one of the 11 telephones on his desk. Hello, he said into the phone. Hello, 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 where's the operator? He jiggled furiously on the little thing you jiggle when you want the operator. Operator, where are you?
They won't answer you now, said Miss Tibbs. They're all watching television.
Well, this one'll answer, said the president, snatching up a bright red telephone. This was the hotline, direct to the premier of Soviet Russia in Moscow. It was always open and only used in terrible emergencies. It's just as likely to be the Russians as Mr. Hilton, the president went on. Don't you agree, Nanny?
It's bound to be Russians, said Miss Tibbs.
Premier Yugotov speaking, said the voice from Moscow. What's on your mind, Mr. President?
Knock, knock, said the president.
Who's there? Said the Soviet premier.
Warren.
Warren who?
War and Peace by Leo Tolstoy, said the president. Now see here, Yugotov, you get those astronauts off yours, off that space hotel of ours this instant. Otherwise, I'm afraid we're going to have to show you just where you get off, Yugotov.
Those astronauts are not the Russians, Mr. President.
He's lying, said Miss Tibbs.
You're lying, said the president.
Not lying, sir, said Premier Yugotov. Have you looked closely at those astronauts in the glass box? I myself cannot see them too clearly on my TV screen, but one of them, the little one with the pointed beard and the top hat, has a distinctly Chinese look about him. In fact, he reminds me very much of my friend, the Prime Minister of China.
Great garbage, cried the president, slamming down the red phone and picking up a porcelain one. The porcelain phone went direct to the head of the Chinese Republic in Peking.
Hello, 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 said the president.
Wings Fish and Vegetable Store in Shanghai, said a small distant voice. Mr. Wing speaking.
Nanny, cried the president, banging down the phone. I thought this was a direct line to the premier.
It is, said Miss Tibbs. Try again.
The president picked up the receiver. Hello, he yelled.
Mr. Wong speaking, said a voice at the other end.
Mr. Who? Screamed the president.
Mr. Wong, assistant station master, Chungking, and if you're asking about 10 o'clock train, 10 o'clock train, no running today, boiler burst.
The president threw the phone across the room at the postmaster general. It hit him in the stomach.
What's the matter with this thing? Shouted the president.
It is very difficult to phone people in China, Mr. President, said the Postmaster General. The country's so full of people, every time you ring, you get the wrong number.
You're not kidding, said the President.
The Postmaster General replaced the telephone on the desk.
Try it just once more, Mr. President, please, he said. I've tightened the screws underneath.
The President again picked up the receiver.
Greetings, Honourable Mr. President, said a voice far away. Here is Assistant Premier Chu On Dat speaking. How can I do for you?
Knock, knock, said the president.
Who's there?
Ginger.
Ginger who?
Ginger yourself much when you fell off the Great Wall of China, said the president.
Okay, Chu On Dat. Let me speak to Premier. How you been?
Much regret. Premier, how you been? Is not here at the moment, Mr. President.
Where is he?
He's outside, mending a puncture on his bicycle.
Oh, no, he isn't, said the president. You can't fool me.
At this very minute, he's boarding our magnificent space hotel with 7 other rascals to blow it up.
Excuse me, please, Mr. President. You've made a very big mistake.
No mistake, barked the president. And if you don't call them off right away, I'm going to tell my chief of the army to blow them all sky high.
Hooray, said the chief of the army. Let's blow everyone up. Bang!
Silence!
Barked Miss Tibbs.
I've done it, cried the chief financial advisor. Look at me, everybody. I've balanced the budget.
And indeed he had. He stood proudly in the middle of the room with the enormous $200 billion budget balanced beautifully on the top of his bald head. Everyone clapped. Then suddenly, the voice of astronaut Shuckworth cut in urgently on the radio loudspeaker in the president's study.
They've linked up and gone on board, shouted Shuckworth. And they've taken in the bed. I mean the bomb.
The president sucked in his breath sharply.
He also sucked in a big fly that happened to be passing at the time. He choked. Miss Tibbs thumped him on the back. He swallowed the fly and felt better. But he was very angry. He seized pencil and paper and began to draw a picture. As he drew, he kept muttering, I won't have flies in my office. I won't put up with them.
His advisers waited eagerly. They knew that the great man was about to give the world yet another of his brilliant inventions. The last had been the Gilligrass left-handed corkscrew, which had been hailed by left-handers across the nation as one of the greatest blessings of the century.
There you are, said the president, holding up the paper. This is the Gilligrass patent fly trap.
They all crowded round to look.
The fly climbs up the ladder on the left, said the president. He walks along the plank, he stops, he sniffs, he smells something good, he peers over the edge and sees the sugar lump. Aha! He cries, sugar! He's just about to climb down the string to reach it when he sees the basin of water below. Ho ho! He says, this is a trap, they want me to fall in. So he walks on, thinking what a clever fly he is. But as you see, I have left out one of the rungs in the ladder he goes down by, so he falls and breaks his neck.
Tremendous, Mr. President, they all exclaimed.
Fantastic! A stroke of genius!
I wish to order 100,000 for the army immediately, said the chief of the army.
Thank you, said the president, making a careful note of the order.
I repeat, said the frantic voice of Shuckworth over the loudspeaker. They've gone on board and taken the bomb with them.
Stay well clear of them, Shuckworth, ordered the president. There's no point in getting your boys blown up as well.
And now, all over the world, the millions of watchers waited more tensely than ever in front of their television sets. The picture on their screens, in vivid colour, showed the sinister little glass box securely linked up to the underbelly of the gigantic space hotel. It looked like some tiny baby animal clinging to its mother. And when the camera zoomed closer, it was clear for all to see that the glass box was completely empty. All eight of the desperados had climbed into the space hotel, and they had taken their bomb with them.